Live, it says. The program says we're live, Alexander. How are you?
I'm very well. You know something, Alex, it's always energizing. Live shows like the one we're doing now are always energizing. Doing programs is fun often, but you know, having that kind of interaction, because you know, you never quite know what's going to come when we do a program together. Well, we discuss things that we've both read, and we have the topic, and we know each other's minds. But when you've got the viewers coming in, well, that's often adds a different dimension. And I have to say, there have been occasions when they've asked questions I don't know the answer to, which is rather wonderful.
All right, let's. Hello, Spartan Warrior Queen moderating. How are you? Thank you for moderating this live stream. And let's do a quick around the world real quick as we wait for people to join us and see where everyone is joining us from. And then we'll get started, Alexander, at looking at the debate. We'll probably do the debate first and then maybe comment on Bublinski. Bublinski, I think I think you're right.
Bublinski.
Yeah. All right, because that was actually the pre-show. That was the presser before the debate. But and wow, what a pre-show that was. What a presser that was. But let's see where people are joining us from, just for like about a minute or two, and then we'll get into the debate. And we'd love to hear what everyone said in the live stream as well as to who they thought won this what was supposed to be the third debate. Well, maybe it was if you count that the second debate was Trump debating against what's her name, Savannah Guthrie. Yeah. I mean, that was a debate, actually.
It was, so,
yeah. So anyway, all right. Valley S, thank you for that super chat, Valley S. How are you? Nick is in London. I think he's in Joshua Tree, California. All right. Mm-hmm. Joshua Tree, California. Devin, England. London calling. Nigel, Alabama. In the house, so snowy skies of eastern Washington state. It's snowing in Washington, huh? Hi from the UK. Hi from Mars. All right, you're my favorite analysts. We love everybody that's hanging out in Mars. Hi from Liverpool, England, Palm Beach, Florida, Massachusetts, Harper's Ferry, Boston. Helen, how are you? Palm Desert, CA from Warsaw. How's everyone in Warsaw? Oaxaca, Mexico, El Paso, Texas, USA, Boston, Moscow, rainy Moscow, Anatoly, Dobry Vecher, from Florida, from sunny New Mexico, from Finland, Lancashire, Wales, Essex, England, Nottingham, UK, from Scotland, Guerrero, Mexico, hi from Canada, from Northwest UK, The Hague, Holland, from Dayalan, from South Africa. How are you doing? Hello from Dubai. Let's see, North Carolina. Hi, Alex and Alexander from Ireland. Noreen, how are you, Noreen? Hello, Switzerland. From India, awesome. How are you doing in India? From Warsaw again. Philadelphia, Sweden, London, New Zealand, Florida, Ireland, Kenya, San Fran, San Antonio, Calgary, Sussex, Norway, Kentucky, Black Mountain, North Carolina, Alexander, South Africa, two people from South Africa, then Michigan. Alexander, who won the debate? Everyone in the live stream. As Alexander says, who won the debate? If you think Trump won, type in one. If you think Biden won, type in two. Alexander, who won the debate?
Well, I have no hesitation and equivocation at all in saying Trump won. I thought he didn't just win. I thought he won hands down. I thought he was presidential, convincing. He had all the facts, all the arguments. I think he wiped the floor. I don't think there's any doubt about it. It was a different debate to the previous two, because this time the moderator was a bit better. I have to say that was, for me, the fundamental difference.
I haven't seen a two yet. Keep on going. I'm just showing you there's all the ones. Here's a draw. Someone said a draw. Three for a draw. I don't know if they need a draw.
Three for a draw. Well, I mean, I didn't think it was a draw. I think Trump won. I think Trump won convincingly and completely. Now, there are some people. Everybody has the right to their own opinions. I mean, but briefly, I mean, there were problems. I mean, if it had been down to me, the debate would have been conducted differently. We'd have had much more time on the Hunter Biden laptop and on all of that, because to my mind, that is far and away the most important story. But this time, the moderator, was much more appropriate and even-handed. She didn't. The microphone business of muting the microphone wasn't abused, and it struck me that the effect was that Trump showed that he has, that he's the president. He makes the decisions. He's not the person people say that he is. He's a much very, very effective manager. He knows what he's doing. And Biden, by contrast, came across as evasive and lacking in ideas. Now, this is a point which we've made before on other programs. It was very obvious to me at the time of the Democratic Party convention, this virtual convention, that they're running on empty. There is absolutely nothing there. He is a candidate who's running on empty. And I thought he, by the way, did look tired and unfocused at times. But over and beyond that, he really didn't have very much of any substance to say. And there were, again, the weird gaffes, like, that Hitler was our friend. I mean, when was he ever our friend? I mean, Franklin Roosevelt and Hitler were the best of buddies. I mean, this is in response to, Trump trying to do diplomacy with Kim Jong-un. Trump, who, by the way, has imposed the harshest sanctions of all on North Korea. But I mean, that was just gruesome. And I thought also, again, that it demonstrated that, on those things that Biden tries to criticize Trump on, like the handling of the pandemic, which has been his major talking point, it just as happened in the Pence-Harris debate, when the Biden-Harris team are subjected to criticism and attack on that, and people actually ask them for explanations, they tend to unravel. It turns out that they don't have any really better plan other than, of course, to lock everybody up seemingly forever, as far as I can see. But he didn't come across as very well, even on those points where one might have expected that he would be strongest. And on the laptop, I think he has come across terribly and evasively. But he was maneuvered into saying things which could very easily come to haunt him, because he made a comment that he, never received money from another country. Well, what does that mean? And does that cover the businesses in that country, for example? But besides, we all know what was happening. The money went to Hunter, and Hunter sent on the money to Dad. That was the situation. But people will see that as another denial, and it was a denial that is untrue, and which more and more people are beginning to realize was untrue. I would have liked far more time devoted to discussion of the laptop, but when that laptop was discussed, Joe Biden's responses were completely unconvincing. So a solid win for Donald Trump. I think the early polling shows it. The only opinion poll I know of which says otherwise is one by CNN, which doesn't surprise me. But all the others show a solid win for Trump. I gather the focus groups basically say the same. And I don't think it was a draw. I think that we will see that this is actually an important week, when the balance of events in the election has moved further in Trump's favor. And I think the remaining time between now and the election will show that.
Yeah. People in the live stream, I forgot, maybe someone in the live stream remembers, was it Trump or Alexander? Maybe was it, not Trump, was it Biden that opened the door up to the Hunter laptop questioning? I think it was Biden that brought up Giuliani.
Yes.
And then that opened the door for the whole Hunter thing, kind of opened up the floodgates. But I don't quite remember, but I think it was Biden that brought up Giuliani, and then Biden even realized it. He was kind of like, oh, crap. I think I stepped in it.
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, which is, by the way, fairly like his whole pattern right through. I mean, he was not in control of much of what he was saying. And it was his handling of the Giuliani was, I mean, completely inappropriate, it seems to me. But he's blaming off on Russia again. Just opened him up for more attacks by Donald Trump. You know, Russia, 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 as Trump basically said. And again, Biden had no real response to this. That was a great line. Absolutely great line. I mean, I think it's perhaps a crushing one because it's the only thing in the end that the Democrats have against Trump. I mean, it's the one they recycle constantly. I think people are completely bored by it. I mean, apart from, you know, the true believers who fervently believe it, but they must be a diminishing number, however much that they are there. But I mean, it exposed again how the Democrats are running on empty and how they resort to this in order to try. It came across as evasive again. They resort to it whenever they're in trouble.
Yeah. I like how Trump is, he expresses himself, like his whole, his facial expressions, his hands, everything. He's really theatrical when he's you know, replying to stuff. And when he was saying the Russia, 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 I mean, he was just like, you could just see the expressions on his face were very genuine.
Yes.
Very genuine expressions, where Biden was, I mean, he was just empty. There's just an emptiness there.
Yes.
There's no soul there.
Yes.
And let me get to some points that I wrote down. Mm. I thought the best part of the night, by the way, was the best part of the night was when Biden said, "Where's this guy from?" And then Trump goes to the mic and goes, "Queens." That was classic Trump, man. I mean, that alone should give him the election. The guy is just real. I mean, he's just a real person. It's really, really nice. And he drove that point home.
Yeah.
I think he drove the point home that he's a real person, and this guy Biden is just another politician. He even said that. So my first point, which I want you to comment on, and I've got like 6-7 points written down here, not in any specific order.
Mm.
What we saw last night was not Trump campaigning against Biden. We saw Trump campaigning against the CV. Because at the end of the day, the past maybe 6 months of the Democrats' campaign has been firmly based on the CV. Their whole campaign. They tried Russiagate. They tried Ukrainegate. They've tried the taxes 5 times over and over again. Nothing has been able to stick. They went with the CV. And even last night, it was all about the CV. And that's who Trump has really been running against this whole time. Not Biden. Biden's just a placeholder. What do you think of that?
Absolutely true. Can I just say, I mean, if it had not been for the CV, this would be a completely different election. The CV has been Donald Trump's problem. But again, it's so striking. It comes back to what I said. When the Democrats actually debate it, they're not really very good at it. They don't really have a great and convincing pitch to make to the American people about it. So yes, it was about that. It is about that. It is, you know, in some ways the thing that the Democrats are always bringing up, but they don't have a good story to tell on it, and that is their big problem. I mean, they can't really point the finger and say, if we had been in charge, it would have been different. It would have been better because we would have done A, B, C, D, E, F, G, which you didn't do. They don't actually say that because actually they're not able to say that because they wouldn't have done any of those things. They don't really have a plan. They don't really have a plan for anything. I mean, the other thing where I thought they came off terribly in this debate, for example, is immigration. Again, it's a thing where once more, when they're actually debating it, they don't really have an attractive or interesting or compelling or effective or persuasive message to give. They always come across as people who sloganize on these issues, but have no real policies behind them.
Yeah, and I think when you come down to the CV debate, you really see that one candidate is about positivity and moving forward and moving past it. And the other candidate is just such doom and gloom. My God, I mean, you know, you listen to Biden, it's just like, it's so dark. He even said it, we're about to enter a dark winter. And you're just like, for God's sakes, man, what the hell are you going to be a leader of, man? I mean, it was awful. That was an awful line.
Terrible line, actually. And I have to say, and again, and I come back to something I said on another program. I mean, America, which has always been a country that's thrived on optimism, and what you offer the American people, doom and pessimism. I mean, I thought that was awful. It'd be awful in any country, but in America especially, particularly awful there. But, you know, coming back to what you said about Biden, you know, that he's empty of energy, empty of drive, empty of personality. Well, he was. I mean, I can't put it any other way. Absolutely, he was. And Trump is a personality. I mean, it's a very, very powerful and dynamic one. Of that, there's no question. A force of nature, as a commentator in Britain described him.
Yeah. All right. Staying with the CV real quick. A huge line, which I thought was a great line that Trump pounded Biden on, was he painted Biden as the lockdown guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the best lines, if not the best line, was something where he said, if we continue to lock down, if we continue to lock down this nation, we won't have a nation. And then he also then he schooled Biden on how businesses run. When Biden was like, no, I would get plexiglass and put it in between the restaurant tables and all that stuff. And I thought Trump's response to that was absolutely golden. He's like, Joe, and he's calling him Joe throughout the whole time. You know, like he's talking to a guy across the table from him. He's like, Joe, you can't do that to businesses. That's not how businesses run. Mm-hmm. These plexiglass things are expensive. And then you're going to have people walk into the restaurant surrounded by all this glass and all this plastic. He's like, Joe, you can't do this to people. I thought that was really empathetic.
Yes, it was. I mean, it shows an awareness also of realities. But can I just say something? I mean, I thought the very interesting thing was that in the end, Trump did maneuver Biden into becoming the lockdown candidate. And not only did Biden come across as the lockdown candidate, I got the sense that that's what he wants to do, which is a disastrous thing. I mean, you know, it was almost as if, you know, ultimately that was his plan. And it was extracted from him. So, yes, I mean, again, it was really surprising. And how this subject was completely turned around. Again, it was like the Pence-Harris debate, where we were all expecting that Harris would make at least some inroads on that issue. And Pence turned it round. I think Trump actually did it even better. He came across as human. He came across as optimistic. He came across as effective and commanding. And frankly, Biden came across as none of those things and incompetent as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think the main point, and I think the main line of attack for Trump that I've got here is that he managed to place some doubt, I think, in whatever voters are left that haven't decided. He put the seed of doubt as to whether Biden's character is what he claims it to be. The guy, the all-American guy from Scranton, the Honest Joe guy, Honest Joe from Scranton. I think one of the main strategies that the Trump team had was to paint Biden as a dubious, corrupt politician, in other words, tarnish his character. And if there's anything that I got from the debate, anything that I took away, is I think that whatever people are sitting there on the fence and saying, I don't know about Trump, I don't like him. Joe, you know, I don't know about him, but he seems like he's a good guy. If they have that thought, he seems like he's a good guy. I think Trump was very, very successful in placing that doubt in people's heads.
I think that's entirely right. I think the other thing that happened actually was that Biden was very accurately characterized as a professional politician who's been in politics for 47 years, an absolute full-time member, if you like, of the Washington elite. Somebody completely remote and removed from people and the life of America. Also someone who has never succeeded in doing in those 47 years all the wonderful and great things that he said he's going to do. I mean, his record of achievement actually is very poor. He wasn't ultimately able to defend it. So, yes, I think he was represented as somebody who is part of an establishment that many people in the United States have come to see as corrupt, because to be very clear, he is part of that establishment to his fingertips. And we've seen from the laptop overwhelmingly strong evidence that he is corrupt. And that did come across, but also somebody who ultimately isn't very effective in looking after people, because he's had plenty of time to do it and he's never has.
Yeah. All right. Unforced errors. Now, I think it's really ironic that the debate commission started putting in these two new rules with the 2-minute time limits and the muting of the mic. Mm. And it actually worked in Trump's favor, because Biden actually had to get through 2 minutes of talking. He has a lot of problems getting through 2 minutes of talking.
Yes.
And as the debate went on, Trump started very, I don't want to say slow. He was very good from the beginning, but he was calm. As it started to go through, you could see Trump was getting more and more energy. Not that he was getting out of control. Yeah. You can just see that his energy was ramping up.
Yeah.
Biden started, I would say, even. And as the debate went on, you could see he was really getting tired. I mean, he was looking at his watch, kind of saying, geez, when's this going to end? You know, I've got to get home and go to sleep, or either that, or the medicine that they've pumped me up with is about to wear off. So I don't know what was going through his head there. But the three unforced errors that I pointed out, one you mentioned, and that was the Hitler gaffe. Mm-hmm. That was a bizarre gaffe. The other one was the Abraham Lincoln gaffe. I don't know what your thoughts were on that. The big one, which I think may have sunk Biden's entire campaign, was the energy and the fracking gaffe.
Yeah.
When he said that he is going to pull out of all the energy stuff, I'm paraphrasing again. Mm. When Trump asked him point blank, are you going to get rid of energy and frack and all that stuff, whatever he asked him, and Biden said, yes. Even the moderator asked him, what do you mean by that? And I don't think she was asking him like a question, what do you mean? I think she was like doing a facepalm going, oh my God, what did you just say?
Yes.
Because with that, Pennsylvania's gone,
Texas, obviously.
Ohio. I mean, so many states now may be off the table.
I agree. I completely agree. Can I just say on the energy and on Biden's decline in energy, I'm going to be straightforward. I think he is running out of energy. I think he does get boosters to get through these things. I noticed, by the way, Giuliani says the same thing. He has these, that there are medications. I thought exactly the same happened during the town halls, by the way. That the more time passes, the more Biden becomes unfocused, becomes visibly tired, starts to stumble and lose his way. And I think this did happen on this occasion to an increasing degree as the evening wore on, in exactly the way that you said. I think you're absolutely right. I think that was a disastrous gaffe. I think that probably across the entire Biden campaign, they would have been clutching their heads with horror. And you're quite right. I mean, you know, Pennsylvania, fracking, Pennsylvania there, Texas. I mean, goodness. I mean, a disastrous thing. And of course, the Trump people, who, unlike the Biden people, are actually out there on the ground. They will be in those states between now and the 3rd of November. They will be pushing this for all it's worth.
Oh, yeah. They're going to have campaign ads with that line from Biden just running on a continuous loop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean,
that was a huge mistake. That may have been the biggest mistake he made.
Yeah. But it also, again, I think, emphasizes the extraordinary unwieldy nature of the Democratic Party's coalition, that they have to bring all these people together. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, Biden goes with those on the left rather than those at the center, because that's where he knows the real progressive energy within his party is. A more nimble politician, a politician more focused, more skilled, would have known how to handle that. Biden didn't have to have a clue. He was clueless how to do it. He just defaulted back into, as I said, the position that he thinks will appease the people on his left who don't like him.
Yeah. All right. Danny is moderating. How you doing, Danny? And Danny set up our Discord server. So we'll put the link in the live stream as well. So make sure you guys go to our Discord server and join us there, where the chat continues 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our Discord server. Alexander, we touched upon the Hunter laptop scandal. Mm. I really liked the way that Trump phrased it when he led into it. He said, Joe, he said, it's not about me, Joe. Mm. I think you need to explain to the American people what you've been up to. And he's like, maybe this is your chance to explain what you were doing. Mm. And that was it. I mean,
Well, exactly.
Biden didn't have an answer.
Well, he didn't have an answer, because I'm going to say straightforwardly, there is no answer. This is one instance where Biden is in a very, very difficult position. I mean, we've discussed previously in our programs why, in my opinion, this scandal makes it impossible for Biden to remain a candidate. I mean, in any normal election, in any other election, I would have expected him to go by now, to go. I mean, he should never have stood at all. But he has no answer. But inevitably, given that he has no answer, he's going to be exposed to attacks like that. Trump is going to say, well, here's your chance. Set the record straight. Tell us what, you know, the real situation is. And what does Biden do? He does basically nothing except retreat into evasions and non-denial denials, which are, when you really unpack them, they don't really mean what you are supposed to think that they mean. So it was a terrible performance, actually. And I think we're going to be hearing an awful lot more about this laptop between now and Election Day.
We'll get into it.
Hostages to fortune all over the place there.
Yeah, we'll talk about Bob Alinsky in a bit. What do you make of their pathetic, I think it's a pathetic scheme to try and talk about the fact that Trump had a bank account in China. Trump handled it very well, by the way. I mean,
absolutely. But there's the difference, you see, because Trump explains things. He's a businessman. He carries out a business. He explained exactly what was going on with China. It's completely transparent. It's completely open. By the way, it's something we've always known about. There's never been any secret about Trump's business affairs in China, or indeed about anything relating to Trump's business affairs. So he is able to explain it because he has nothing to hide. Biden is hiding, and that's the fundamental difference. So I think Trump, as you correctly said, handled it with skill. We've always known that, as I said, he's had a business there. We've always known he's had investments there. It was used to pay taxes. End of story. There's nothing more to be made of this. That was just an attempt, in my opinion. Like, by the way, the ridiculous Borat thing with Giuliani. It was just an attempt. It was just an attempt that was whipped up to try and cause Trump some kind of embarrassment. And he swatted it away.
They're panicking. It shows they're panicking.
By the way, the Borat story, just for you to know, has had more attention in some British newspapers than the Hunter Biden laptop. And that is going to really bewilder some people here in Britain, because they will wonder, well, who is this Giuliani? I'm not exaggerating here. Who is this Giuliani? Why is this even important? Because as they haven't really explained who Giuliani is or about the story of the laptop, a lot of people in Britain are going to be very confused when they read all of that. I mean, a lot of them obviously get their news from the alternative media, and they won't be confused. But it was very bizarre and very strange and very weird and rather silly, frankly.
Well, the Guardian ran point on the Borat story, actually, which is really, really weird. But I mean, Guardian ran point on that Borat story.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Why? Yeah, it was,
well, why indeed? I mean, I thought it was just, I thought it was stupid. I thought it was counterproductive. All it's going to do in Britain is going to make a lot of people look up Giuliani. Go to Google, type in Giuliani, and then what they'll start to find is all the information about Hunter Biden on the laptop. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. This is one that not many people are talking about, but I think this is actually quite a big one. I think Joe Biden threw Barack Obama under the bus last night when he said, we don't need Obamacare anymore. We're going to have Bidencare. I was just like, dude, if I was Barack Obama's and I was sitting in my $16 million Martha Vineyards house and my signature piece of legislation, I mean, you know, the thing that defined my entire 8 years in office, Obamacare. Mm. And this guy comes along at a debate and says, screw Obamacare, we're going to have Bidencare. I would be like, if I was Barack Obama, I'd be on the phone being, all right, guys, just sink him. Sink him. Sink this guy.
Well, absolutely, because what he does is that it admits that that Obamacare is failing. I mean, it trashes not just Obama's legacy, but in effect, Biden's legacy, because it was his vice president in that administration. So it just, I thought it was, a gaffe, if I have to be straightforward. I think that Biden just didn't know what he, again, if Biden had come along and had said, well, I have a policy, this is what I want to build on Obamacare, I want to make Obamacare better and stronger, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I've got all these ideas, and, you know, make it attractive. Well, you might have agreed or you might have disagreed, but it would have been something. But Biden doesn't have real plans. When he was asked at the time of the town halls to explain his plans, I mean, it was just burbles were coming out as far as I could see. I mean, I couldn't understand most of what he was saying. But you're quite right. Obama's signature strategy got trashed. It's admitted now. It's not actually very good. And, well, you know, we made mistakes.
Yeah, he trashed Obama. After Obama was like out campaigning for him in Pennsylvania, man, Joe Biden is, he's just completely lost. I mean, it's just bordering on abuse what they're doing to him. Anyway, Alexander, you want to get to Bublinski? So is there anything else you want to say about the debate or anything? Yeah. I mean, I'll just say that the polls, I'm looking at the polls and I'm looking at Trump's approval. I think Rasmussen has him at around 52%, which is 1% higher than where Obama was in 2012. Mm. Obviously, I'm seeing the polls and all the polls are showing that there is a tightening with the exception of one or two, if you believe the polls. If you believe the polls. I mean, I'll just tell you from the people that I talk to here, and we're not in the States, we're far away. When I say that Trump is going to win, everyone just looks at me like I am high as a kite. Because the message that everyone is getting in the media, outside of the United States at least in my neck of the woods, is that this is going to be a Biden landslide, a massive landslide. That's the message that everyone's getting from the media here. I know there's a lot of media in the U.S., that is also saying that, but what's it like in the UK, Alexander? We'll wrap it up and go to.
They're much more careful here. Interestingly, they clearly want Biden to win, and they are, you know, highlighting all the polls that show Biden winning, but they're far from confident that he is going to win. It's quite an interesting that the dynamic is completely different in Britain. People are much more wary of this. I think people also remember very well what happened in 2016, when the opinion polls actually were pretty much the same. They were saying the same sort of things that Clinton was going to win. And of course, instead, Trump won. So people are more cautious about this here than they are, certainly than they were in 2016. Of that, there's no question. In 2016, they didn't take Trump seriously. They're taking much more seriously this time.
Yeah.
And I'd add that though they barely talk about it, in fact, they avoid talking about it, the Hunter Biden laptop story, of that there's no question of doubt, has rattled them.
Well, let's get into that then, because you had a pregame show from Bobulinski.
Yes.
Bobulinski. I like that name. And this guy came in the room with, I think, three mobile phones, and he just went off on Joe Biden. I mean, this guy is saying everything that Biden is talking about with regards to, I don't know what my son is doing. I don't get involved in his business. I have no idea what Burisma is. I have no idea what he did in China when he was on the plane with me on Air Force Two and we were going there together. This guy came in there and he was just like, I've got the phones. I've got the text messages. I've got the emails. Everything that laptop said is true. I'm going to hand it all over to the Senate and the FBI. The FBI makes me a little uneasy, but he says, I'm handing it all over. I'm a patriot. I think he said, I'm a registered Democrat.
Yes.
And I was just like, for the first time, we actually have a real life witness, like a whistleblower outside of, say, Snowden and Assange and Chelsea Manning. But we have now a whistleblower in one of these U.S. Cases that we've seen for the past 4 years, Russia Gates, Ukraine Gates. But now we have him here. We know his name. We're actually seeing him. He's actually speaking to us. And he's got all the information in his hands and he's handing it over. Very big difference from what we heard from the Democrats for the 4 years of all their hoaxes that they threw onto us, starting with Russia Gate and going all the way through to Ukraine Gate. It was explosive. This guy's going to sink the Biden family.
Well, absolutely.
And I think he wants to sink them because they ripped him off of money. Well, that's, I think, his motivation.
Well, I'm sure it is. But I mean, the point is, he's a real witness. That's why he's convincing. He's a real witness to actual events. There were no witnesses to Russiagate. Oh, no witnesses, real witnesses to Ukrainegate. You remember we went through all these hours of videos and broadcasts that we did, going through all those so-called witnesses that the Democrats brought to the impeachment. And, you know, we were saying time and again, these people aren't witnesses. Most of them weren't even party. They weren't even there when Trump spoke to Zelensky. I mean, you know, that famous call. They were all talking about things that had no bearing on what Trump was being impeached for. So, I mean, there were no witnesses because there was nothing to witness. It was all fiction. This is not fiction. This is a real event. This is real information. These are real people. And Bobulinski is the first. There'll be others, I'm sure, in time. I mean, you know, if things goes further, which I'm sure it will, but if it goes further, then I'm sure more witnesses will come forward. And I'm sure there's lots of people who have lost money through their association with the Bidens. I'm sure that Mr. Bobulinski, if that is part of, you know, his backstory, I'm sure he's not the only one. So we're going to see lots and lots of people like that coming forward. We never saw anything like that with Donald Trump, because all those scandals were not really scandals, because they were fictions. They were invented things. They were fantasies. This isn't a fantasy. This comes from Hunter Biden's own laptop. It comes from other information that has been pouring out steadily for years, if anybody wanted to follow up on it. And my goodness, we know that there's lots of witnesses in Ukraine. Some of them have wanted to come to the United States, and they've been prevented from doing so because the U.S. authorities haven't granted them visas.
Yeah. Let me do this one super chat, because it's actually the question that I'm going to ask you, but I'll take the super chat because John actually asks it on my behalf here. And it says, Bobulinski was to testify to the Senate this a.m., but the FBI wants him first. Will they pressure him and cover it up? That was the same exact question I was going to ask you. Does it make you nervous that he's handing all this stuff over to the FBI?
Well, he has to hand this stuff over to the FBI, because that's what you're required to do. Because the FBI, after all, are the police, and you report crime to the police. So you have to report it to the FBI. You have to report it to the police in Delaware, even though the attorney in Delaware is an ardent Biden supporter. I mean, she's spoken in the most euphoric terms about, eulogistic terms about Biden. So you have no choice. That has been the problem right the way through. The FBI will investigate even the most nonsensical rumor about Donald Trump and Donald Trump's family and friends and colleagues and associates. They will take the most ludicrous fiction and they will investigate it obsessively. That was what the Mueller investigation was. When it comes to the Bidens, they will sit on a laptop which has piles of information which point in all sorts of directions, and they will do nothing about it for the better part of a year. But, you know, undoubtedly for worse, they are the police authority at the moment in the United States. You have no choice but to go to them if you are a law-abiding citizen. So I think it is a bad thing, but it's an unavoidable thing, and it's the problem. It's just as well that he's going to go to the Senate and will be providing all the information there. And I hope that's done in public. I presume it will be. And I presume it will be at least broadcast that way, because Senate hearings tend to be broadcast and we should get it all, in the open. But, he's clearly testifying. He's clearly prepared to go on oath. He's clearly prepared to provide evidence. And it could be decisive, and it could be the thing that ultimately breaks the whole, silence, the whole policy of silence. I'm going to use the word, the omerta. We all, I think, know what that means, the code of silence that has protected the Bidens up to now.
Yeah, and another track to this story is that we now have the top echelon of the Democrats also implicated. Mm-hmm. We have messages saying that, you have to, kind of bring into this circle Kamala Harris, Schumer. I mean, they start naming some very powerful names in the Democrat Party. And mm-hmm. I'm starting to think, when are all these people like Schumer going to say, someone's going to have to take the fall here, and it's going to have to be Hunter and you, Joe? I mean, it's getting close to them. That's my point. Yes. We're starting to see today. I saw a news report that this Chinese company, this now defunct Chinese company, actually was donating to the Clinton Foundation as well, something like $180,000 to the Clinton Foundation as well. So we're starting to see that this is getting out of the circle of the Biden family, and it's starting to touch upon the upper echelon of the Democrat Party. And when I look at things like this, there comes a point in time where these higher ups and all these people that are sitting at the boardroom table start to say, you know what, this is getting too close to me. And everyone's saying the same thing. And they say, we're going to have to cut Joe loose, or
absolutely,
loose, or both of them loose.
Absolutely. That's the nature of this. I mean, when he becomes a danger, when he becomes a risk to them, they will cut him loose and they will say, well, he fooled us. As if such a thing were possible, and he's a bad apple, but we're all good, honest Americans. The reality is that the whole Democratic Party at its top has now become riddled with this sort of thing, and one of the reasons why they need to lose this election, by the way, Giuliani also made this point, is that the Democratic Party needs to be completely cleaned up. I mean, it needs to be cleaned up because it remains one of the two big parties in the United States. But at the moment, it is riddled with corruption. And frankly, I don't think Joe Biden is the worst. I'm sure he's not.
No, they're starting to circle around Kerry. We've said it many times. Actually, we're probably the first channel that has pointed out how close Kerry is to all of this, because it was Kerry that was traveling with Joe to the Ukraine. It was Kerry that was Secretary of State. It was Kerry's stepson who was roommates with Devin Archer. Mm. It was those three guys, Archer, Hines, and Biden, that were partners in Rosemont Seneca. I believe they are. They were all three of them were directors in Rosemont Seneca. You know what, Alexander? I was going through our videos and I found a video we did last year where we actually talk about the press conference with Kerry and Christopher Hines, where Christopher Hines goes to the press and says, you know what? I'm out of Rosemont. I have no association with these guys, Archer and Biden. This was last year. And Kerry's like sitting in the background, kind of just watching on, you know, that figure in the shadows. And we talked about what was going on there and we called it. We said, you know what? Kerry and Hines, they know what's going on. They can feel that something's closing in on them and they're removing themselves from Rosemont. They're removing themselves from any association with Archer and Hunter. They were onto it, but there's now a lot of stories coming out about Kerry as well and his connection with Hines and with Devin Archer. Alexander, this thing has five tracks that I've pointed out. Five tracks. This is a slam dunk, isn't it? Here are the five tracks. The Senate report. The first, that's actually the first thing that came out. The Senate report, which has all the wires. The laptop. You have a Kazakhstan charity, which has come out with all the documentation of Hunter's trips to Kazakhstan and the gifts that this oligarch, Rabitskan, I think, I forgot his name, that he was sending to Biden's brother, his brother's wife and Hunter, all the gifts he was sending him and the deals. And coincidentally, he had a deal with Biden and he invested, listen to this, guys, this Kazakh oligarch invested $1 million in John Kerry's daughter's film that she was producing. So he invested $1 million in that. And we have the emails as well, all from this charity in Kazakhstan. This it's like a, it's like Tom Fenton, I guess is the best analogy, like something like Judicial Watch, like one of those kinds of charities, nonprofits. You have the track of Cooney, this guy Cooney, who's now speaking with Peter Schweitzer. And he was working with Devin Archer. And now you have the track of Bubba Linsky.
Yeah.
And they're all a slam dunk, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's, I mean, the evidence is becoming overwhelming. I mean, there's a tidal wave of it. And there'll be much more, you know, five tracks. There'll be many more tracks coming. I mean, we haven't heard from lots and lots of people. And, of course, a slam dunk is exactly what it is.
if they blow this,
we have Hunter Biden's own words. We have his emails. Those emails implicate him. They implicate his father too. One can't really argue around that. I mean, bear in mind that there's been no denial of the authenticity of those emails. I mean, if we didn't have those emails, it would be just about possible to say that the case is circumstantial. It would still be very strong. Circumstantial cases can be extremely strong. But we actually have emails which have their own words. And now we have direct witnesses too. So when evidence starts to come together with every part of that evidence corroborating the other part, you know you have a case.
All right. We'll get to Super Chats, Alexander, but I want to, you know, direct another question to you and to everyone in the live stream. And I've thought about this and I've seen some articles written about this actually as well. Hunter Biden was, I mean, he's definitely a tragic figure and he's definitely had a troubled life. And I guess my question to you and to everyone in the live stream is, was all of this a cry for help in a way? In other words, you know, okay, obviously there's the drugs and the intoxication, all that stuff, but the laptops and taking them to the computer shop and just kind of leaving them. I mean, is this kind of like a son going to his father and, you know, kind of saying, you know what, you screwed up my life. You weren't something along these lines. You weren't there for me. So I just don't care anymore. These laptops are going there. I just don't care whatever happens to you or to us.
What makes me
something
bit,
along those lines?
Yeah, what makes me a bit careful about saying that is that, I mean, you know, we have all that business about the underage obsession. And we mustn't lose sight of the fact that, you know, there are apparently other people who are perhaps better spoken of as victims than Hunter Biden is. So, I mean, tragic perhaps, but we must be careful not to talk about him as a victim yet, because, you know, we need to use words carefully and we need to use them accurately. But
I'm not calling him a victim. I'm not calling him a victim. What I'm saying is that
I understand.
This is someone that's I mean, his whole life has been defined by his father's position.
I was just
you can sense that in him, that everything's dependent on his father's name.
I was going to add something actually, though, that there are emails in which he is complaining to his father about the way the father is using him. And one gets the sense of someone who is deeply, deeply unhappy because of the way in which he's being pushed by his father into doing things which he feels in his core are wrong. And I wonder whether a lot of the behavior that we've seen, the leaving the laptop where he left it so that people would find it, was his attempt to try and signal to the world, try in effect to expose himself, because that's the only way he can get out of a situation which he has found, which he is finding intolerable. I mean, this is psychology. We're not psychologists. We need to wait and see, but it wouldn't surprise me. And some of those emails that he sends to his father, who, you know, weird emails. One of them, he refers to his father as Junior.
Yeah.
Very strange. But I mean, they certainly seem to me to point in that direction. But, you know, let's wait and see. Let's find out. I think we will definitely find that Joe Biden was fully informed about everything that Hunter was doing, And if this was a relationship, a close partnership between them, there is no doubt that it was Joe who was the dominant one and the powerful one.
All right, let's get to a super chat here on this topic right here. Sparky says, not a cry for help, just a typical outcome of going into business with a dope friend. Some people will pity him. People got upset with me when I asked that question, by the way.
Yeah, I think I would just explain very quickly. You know, we're both Greeks. Tragedy in Greek, is not the same as victim. You can be a tragic figure, but you can also be a monster at the same time. It doesn't follow that we're not asking you to be sorry for Hunter Biden. And I think that's something we need to make very clear.
All right, let's get to some super chats. Yes, $20 super chat. Thank you very much. From Toilet Sauce. Again, it's great of you to cover the debate because I can't bring myself to watch it. Thank you very much for that. From
I should just say something, which is, of course, it's very late into the night for both of us to watch this debate. So, you know, we put ourselves through quite an ordeal. I didn't find it was such a difficult one this time, though, actually.
No, it was good. From Fanny Tess Barley, first person to mention Adolf loses the argument.
Absolutely. That's an iron rule in debate. And that's exactly right. You know, in Britain, we love debates. We have lots of debating societies. They're debating the debates in schools and colleges and universities and law societies and things of that kind. And it's the thing that's always hammered into you. Never, ever mention Adolf. If you try and bring up Adolf, you've lost your entire argument and your whole debate. And that's absolutely right.
All right, let me get to the I lost it super chats.
By the way, just quickly to add, a crazy comment anyway. I mean, so historically untrue. I mean, what was he even thinking? I mean, does he think? I do sometimes wonder, actually. What did he think?
Oh, that was such a crazy comment. From Toilet Sauce, what would happen if Biden dropped out immediately before Election Day? Would Harris become the nominee or would someone else take his place? And what about people who have already cast their vote in mail-in ballots?
I've had a discussion about this with Tom Longo, and Tom has told me that if Biden drops out, you cannot change the ticket. So the ticket remains Biden-Harris right up to the moment of the election. It's very bizarre, but you know, there is no time to change that now, which is quite extraordinary. That's what Tom Longo has told me. So unless I've misunderstood this. So you'd have a bizarre situation. But can I just say something? Because Tom actually went into this in some detail. He said that what would then happen is that you have the election, but the election is the real election is the Electoral College. And what you could then do is you could say, when the Electoral College meets, you could say to all those people who are Democrat delegates who are there to vote for Biden, well, you can switch your vote to someone else, either to Kamala Harris or Hillary Clinton.
Clinton. From Life of Brian, $4.99 super chat. Integrity is what you do when no one is looking. From Jeff Tubin.
Absolutely true. That's entirely right. That is absolute. I'd never come across that.
Is that the Jeff Toobin?
Yeah.
That was caught in the Zoom call.
Quite possibly.
Life of Brian?
Probably. But it is a fact. Integrity is something you do. Is obviously something that a person who has integrity doesn't do it for effect. They're doing it in private. They're doing it all the time because that's the kind of person they are. A person who pretends to have integrity doesn't have it.
Okay, from Glenn. I love you guys. Have a fantastic weekend. Thank you, Glenn. From Mary Antonia Young, voters for Biden hold their nose pulling the lever for Biden. They don't favor Biden. They despise Trump.
I think that's true. I think that's true of an awful lot of voters. But I'm sure that there are many others. There are many amongst them who, will not want to vote for a person as their president who is the kind of person that Joe Biden is. That's my own view. I mean, it will make a difference, certainly make a difference amongst independents.
All right. From the Donna King, $6.66. I love the show and outside view of U.S. politics. Keep up the good work. Mm. Thank you very much, Donna King. From Javier Alvarez. One sec, guys. Find it. Mm. Thanks for your work. $5 super chat. Thank you, Javier. From John Quinn. This one we read. It's the Bobolinsky one. Mm-hmm. From Sparky, the establishment underestimated the amount of election fraud needed for an HRC victory in 2016. In 2020, election fraud will be turned up to 11.
Well, I think we've seen all the attempts to do that on an extraordinary scale. Whether it's enough, we will see. But already enough has happened to make people very uneasy about this election. I am very uneasy about this election. We shall see.
Hmm. I'm starting to not be uneasy about this election.
I have to say the same. I feel the drift of events is moving against the Democrats and those who want to fix the election. Elections are unpredictable. The United States, it's a country with a tremendous democratic tradition, and I think ultimately it's impossible to control it in this way, in the way that some people are doing it. And Donald Trump is impossible to control. Period.
I'll go back to what I said earlier. Mm. I think the Democrat powers that be, they have two options. Trump, Biden either has to win. And then, you know, all this Hunter laptop stuff, I think all this stuff will go away. Everything will go away. Or they have to get rid of Biden. They have to throw him under the bus.
Yes.
And say, you know what? Yes, Biden did it. His son did it. Mm. They were taking money. Throw him away. Lock him up. In other words, in order to take the heat away from them. Because I've seen this. I've actually seen this in Greece with Basok, the government. And I remember when they were involved in a huge scandal, they gave up one of their own in order to take the pressure away from them. And that guy actually went to prison. He was like 70, 75 years old, and he went to prison. I think he just got out. People in Greece will know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But the party eventually broke up, eventually went down the tubes. But when the scandal was getting too close to them and the heat was getting too close, they made a decision and said, you know what? We're going to throw this guy under the bus. And this guy was a big-time minister. Mm. A big-time politician. So they may end up doing it if they feel that Biden's slipping. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's entirely possible. I wouldn't be at all surprised if, as I said, if the thing is starting to unravel, they pull the plug on Biden and do what Tom Longo says. You know, Biden isn't standing anymore. The ticket still has his name on it. But you tell everybody, vote Biden-Harris, because we'll make sure that your vote goes to Hillary instead. Yeah. Or if not Hillary, well, whomever, Buttigieg.
Hillary or Kamala.
Something like that. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. From Pissed Feckmeister, $5 super chat. Pressure Chris Hines and he flips faster than a gymnast.
Hmm. Well,
possibly.
Possibly.
Possibly. Like we said, we have that video. I'll find that video. Maybe I'll put it in the description box that we did with Kerry and Hines.
Yeah.
That press conference they gave, which was really interesting. Mm. From Mary Antonia Young, Pennsylvania and Wisconsin don't start counting mail-in ballots until election day. Total 30 electoral votes. Comments on this delay?
Well, I'm going to make a simple observation. I speak of someone who's followed elections in many countries. The longer it takes for ballots to be counted in an election, the more time is spent on that, the more reason you have to think that things are being manipulated. It's an iron rule. If a result is announced quickly, it's normally a sign that things are going well and that the election process is going well. If it takes a very, very long time to happen, it's a very, very bad sign about how the election is being conducted.
Yeah. I mean, there was the, Roberts, you know that Roberts flipped and he voted with the Liberals for Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
Which once again underscores how important Amy Coney Barrett was to get on there confirmed.
Yes, and it looks as if that's going to happen, by the way. I mean, she swept all before her in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the Democrats, I noticed, didn't even state to vote against her. So, I mean, it looks as if she's going to be confirmed on the Senate floor very quickly, and will be in for when the election is announced.
She's sharp as can be.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. From Sparky, FBI helps slow roll story and may even tamper with evidence. Chris Rye is anti-Trump, hiding in plain sight. Just listen to his confirmation hearing.
Absolutely. This has been Chris Rye has been one of the most disastrous appointments that Donald Trump has made. He was pushed, I think, into appointing Chris Rye in the aftermath of the Comey sacking. And he was, I think, incredibly badly advised to pick someone like that. Rey has worked against Trump right from the moment that he was appointed, like Dan Coats did, like Gina Haspel still is doing.
Yeah. Gina Haspel's still there. Exactly.
Yeah.
From Sparky, not a cry for help, just the typical outcome of going into business with a dope friend. Some people will pity him.
Mm. Well.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I mean, I will wait and see. I mean, we are only getting bits and bobs of evidence, and you know, trying to work out exactly what the relationship between Hunter and Joe is. We don't yet fully know. But I did read that email, and it was very, very interesting.
Yeah, well, we've got glimpses of that relationship.
We have.
There's no doubt that Joe was. I mean, the father was using the son.
Joe is the dog.
The son definitely benefited.
Absolutely.
The guy made millions and millions.
Joe is the dominant person within this relationship. Be in no doubt about that. That is absolutely the case. Hunter is absolutely the junior partner. And when he writes to his father as junior, it's very interesting. It's a strange inversion of language, and there is something going on there. But you know, let's wait and see. No doubt, a lot of things we will find out in time. And if he's committed crimes, I say if, because you know he's not yet even been charged. But we will learn an awful lot more, and we will learn exactly what the dynamics are. But if he's committed crimes, he should be punished for them.
Yeah. Joe went. Mm-hmm. Hunter.
Absolutely. Joe and Hunter. Absolutely. I mean, when I say punished, I mean, you know, if these things are true, and I personally have no doubt, then I mean, you know, prison.
Yeah. And people aren't even bringing up Joe Biden's brother. I think he has two brothers because Trump actually brought it up at the debate.
Absolutely.
Trump brought up Joe's brothers at the debate.
Yes. It's a firm. It's a family firm.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting for Trump.
It was. Well, I'm sure he knows an awful lot more than we do. don't forget, Giuliani has seen all the things on that laptop. Well, not all of them, but seen a lot of them. And Giuliani is Trump's lawyer. So, I mean, I'm sure he's sharing information with Trump. Things we don't yet know.
Yeah. I agree with that. Things we don't yet know. From Anatoly, 379 rubles. Do you think the Democrats regret not going with Bernie? Interesting question.
Very interesting question. My guess is probably no. I think that for many, many Democrats, they do not want Bernie in charge of the DNC. This is nothing to do with policy. This is nothing with, to do with politics. It is purely about control of the DNC. And I think they feel that if Bernie became the candidate, he would put his own people in charge of the DNC, and the Clintonites, the Bidenites, the Obamaites would be out, or they would be afraid of being out. So I think that's really what that was all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Bernie folded during the Clinton campaign. I mean, in 2016, Bernie folded. And I think from that point on, the Democrats realized that this guy plays ball.
Exactly. Well, he folded again during this campaign, too.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was ever any intention to let him be the candidate, and not because he's the more, you know, he is the more likely to win, but simply, as I said, because for the Democrats controlling the party, for the people who control the Democratic Party, it's more important to control the party than it is to win the presidency, because
yeah, but I think it was
outcomes. At least that was their calculation then.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think it was more. I think it was set up from the beginning. One third of the way there, that Biden was going to be the person they wanted. Absolutely. Because I think this time around, Bernie himself knew that he wasn't going to win. Mm. I think it was all a setup. I think Bernie was just running to kind of bring the progressives, as many Bernie bros as he could, into the Biden camp. Yeah. And I say that because Warren also had the same job. She was tasked with the same thing, and she quit.
Yes.
The minute they told her to quit.
Yes.
I mean, I think everyone kind of had a certain role. It was very much theater in a way. And everyone had their little part to play.
Bernie and Warren are the two Pied Pipers of the Democratic Party. They play the progressive tune and they get all those young idealistic people to come along and vote, join the Democratic Party, participate in the election, and vote in the end for the corrupt establishment candidate. That happened in 2016 with Hillary Clinton, to a certain extent, and it's happening again in this election. That's what Bernie and Warren are there for. But that doesn't mean, I think, that the Democrat Party establishment wants Bernie as, you know, at the center of power within the DNC. He is useful to them, but they don't want him in any form in charge where he might make decisions. Not, I think, because they are especially afraid of him, but because they want to be in control.
Yeah, I agree. Life of Brian, 499. Love you guys, but you missed my joke about how Jeffrey Tobin, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, spectacularly proved his lack of integrity.
Oh, really? Okay. I should say I don't really know who Jeffrey Tobin or Tobin actually is, because it sounds like an American thing. But
he's the guy on the CNN legal analyst who was caught in a Zoom call.
I see. There's some sort of backstory.
He was taking pleasure with himself. He was involved in pleasuring himself on a Zoom call with colleagues.
Oh wow.
And he's since been suspended.
Okay. Well, this sounds very interesting, and I will certainly find out more.
Yeah, he's a big anti-Trumper. He was pushing the whole Russiagate thing. Well, nonstop.
I have to say, make an admission, which is that, you know, even I can't watch everything, and I gave up watching CNN long ago. There just comes a point where you just can't, go on watching nonsense.
If you saw a photo of him, you'd.
Oh, right, okay. Probably.
If you saw a photo of him, you would, or a video, you would be okay. Yes. I know this guy.
Okay.
All right. All right, thank you for that super chat, Life Brian. From Take a Pick 1313, $50 super chat. Thank you very much, Take a Pick, for that super chat. What kind of man, instead of helping his son to get well, uses him to get his 10% cut? Malaka isn't a strong enough word for him. Mm-hmm. I'd know what's really important to my dad. This is why he may have turned to drugs for years and years.
Well, yes. I mean, I think that's a very astute observation and a very astute analysis. As I said, we don't know the whole story of the dynamics between the two. So, you know, we need to wait. But I agree. I mean, I have to say that in any responsible situation, family situation that I can think of, a proper father would not have behaved like this. He'd have acted far more firmly and decisively and quickly to save his son, not put his son in all these impossible positions and compromise him in the way that he has. And of course, if he's been using his son, as all the indications are that he has, using his son as a conduit to make money, well, that is appalling. That would be absolutely shocking. And that, it seems to me, is what all the evidence points to.
Yeah. From Sparky, a $5 super chat. The quote about integrity was originally from Oklahoma quarterback and Congressman J.C. Watts' father. Tubin may have borrowed it. Very well said. Thank you, Sparky, for that. And one second. All right, here we are. AutoSense, RON25. Pretty sure the Romanian intelligence service has all the recordings of Hunter's meetings here. They're pro-globalist now, but if Trump wins, Alexander in Bucharest, I have another video. I'll find that too. Auto sense when I was in Bucharest. I made many trips to Bucharest, yes. And I outlined the corruption between Hunter and Papachescu, I believe is the Romanian oligarch's name. If my memory serves me correct, let me know. No sense if that's correct. He's the big real estate oligarch. Right. He's not in London.
As they all do.
I think he was exiled in London, actually. Yeah. So I think he's running from certain legal cases against him. Yeah. But him and Hunter, and I talked to a lot of people in Romania on the ground in Bucharest, and they were all well aware of the deals that he had going with Hunter Biden. And supposedly those two, I mean, this is what they told me, that those two had franchises of restaurants together. They were developing, this guy was developing like Pizza Huts and Burger Kings, and they were buying up property on the cheap. Yeah. And then they were developing it into all these U.S. franchises. Mm. And Hunter was helping getting all those franchises in place. And this guy had IKEA as well. So anyway, that's just an interesting side story, but I have a video. I've actually done a video on that as well. I'm going to do a follow up on the Romania thing.
Great idea. I mean, I know that you travel to Romania regularly, to Bucharest regularly. Can I just say, it won't be just the Romanian intelligence and security services that have all that information. Every single big security and intelligence service in the world has them. The Russians have it, obviously. The Chinese have it, definitely. Lots of others will. I mean, it's the British, the French, the Germans. They all know about this. But of course, it's those countries that are, adversaries of the United States that people in the US need to think about. I mean, they will. We've discussed this in our programs. The Russians will know everything that Hunter Biden was getting up to in Ukraine, because they have Ukraine completely sewn up from an intelligence point of view. They, a hat doesn't drop there without Moscow knowing about it. And in China, well, of course, the Chinese, I mean, if you've been to China, as I have, the degree of monitoring and surveillance that goes on there is extraordinary. Again, nothing can happen in China which the Chinese authorities don't know.
Yeah. All right, from Anatoly 379 rubles. Trump won, but New York is a ghost town, as are many others. Globalists are ready to buy it all cheap. Has the U.S. fallen to them regardless?
No, I think that it's not yet fallen, but it's it's under siege. Let's put it like that. Under very close siege.
And Trump mentioned New York as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned New York as well.
Yeah.
Russell Hall, $5. Did either of you watch a 2015 documentary called Fraction Magic by Beverly Harris about the capacity for U.S. voting machines to fractionalize votes?
I didn't, and I haven't, but it sounds interesting. Definitely, maybe. But I haven't seen it. It wouldn't surprise me, Bobby.
Fraction Magic. We'll check that out. Thank you very much, Russell, for that. Yeah. From Sparky, Hunter was being used, but like the song says, he was like, quote, keep on using me till you use me up. Like the song says.
Well, exactly. I mean, an awful lot of money has passed through his hands. I mean, when I say an awful lot, I mean, if the numbers that we're hearing are true, we're talking about hundreds and perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars, perhaps billions of dollars. Astonishing sums of money.
It's incredible. From Sparky, establishment Dems don't trust Bernie at all.
I think that's true. I don't think he's actually any kind of danger to them. But, you know, the thing is, if you are, if you've got lots of secrets, if you've been involved in all kinds of things, then you don't trust anybody who isn't part of your own outfit. That's the nature of this kind of thing. I mean, that's how all corrupt outfits become. They are extremely suspicious of any outsiders finding out becoming in any way close to what they're doing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Andrew Hartland says, Trump said he thinks they will win the House. Do you think this is likely?
I don't know. This is something which I think our American viewers are perhaps better at judging. It's very difficult. I mean, it's hard enough to follow the presidential election. But you know, the House of Representatives election is very difficult.
Anything can happen. I mean, The House is always hard. Historically, it's hard for the Republicans to win it, but anything can happen. I mean, the big concern for me is the Senate, because from what I understand, you have, and I hope I get this right, you have 23 or 28 Republican seats that are up for grabs, and you only have 13 or 12 Democrat seats. So, you know, the Republicans are going to have to defend a lot more.
Absolutely.
That's what worries me is the Senate.
Yes. I agree.
Yeah.
I think it's more important at this time because the House of Representatives is incredibly important, but it is the Senate where the administration is made. If the Democrats get control of the Senate, how does Trump appoint his, you know, people to the executive branch? How does he appoint a Secretary of State, an Attorney General, the head of the, I think the FBI director has to be confirmed, for example. I mean, that's where the problems really begin.
Yeah, absolutely. From Red Sea Socialist, $20 Super Chat, zero sympathy for Hunter. I have sympathy for the millions of lives ruined because of the crime bill and the drug laws from the 80s and 90s. If they rig it for Joe, he can free 100,000 plus nonviolent prisoners. First thing to start making it up. The crime bill was brought up by Trump yesterday as well. Yeah,
absolutely. Of course he was. And again, Joe had no real response to it. I mean, when he's challenged, he founders. And by the way, I completely understand that comment, which we've just heard.
Yeah. That's the only piece of legislation he's ever like actually gotten through, and it's probably the worst piece of legislation we think of.
Well, it was absolute blunderbuss legislation that was rushed through in order to try and help Bill Clinton, basically, as far as I can remember.
Yeah. From Mary Antonia Young, $5 Super Chat, comments on Trump's presser announcing Sudan's peace treaty with Israel. Trump walks and chews gum simultaneously. Well, not many people are talking about Sudan.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, he's... you know, whatever your view about the Middle East, he is achieving quite remarkable things. I mean, the diplomatic situation has been transformed there. I mean, we've now got the Gulf states recognizing Israel, and we've now got Sudan recognizing Israel. 5 years ago, that would have seemed impossible.
Yeah.
It's happened.
It's a big story, and not many people reported on it.
Very big story.
Yeah, what did you make of real quick of the Iran gate thing? Real quick, Radcliffe announcing Iran meddling. I mean, Russia, we're used to it now, but
Iran. I mean, I don't, to be completely honest, I wish we got less of this business about you know, outside powers meddling. It didn't make a great deal of sense to me, in all honesty. Whatever the Iranians are doing, they are doing on a minor scale. And if they're doing it, they're incredibly stupid to do it. This is my own view. I can completely understand that the Iranians do not want Donald Trump winning the election. But if they're really going to try and interfere to prevent it, well, I mean, frankly, they're fools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but can they? I mean, they can't really do anything. Emails or something like
spam
that.
Spam emails is not going to change anything, frankly. Not anything, no.
Yeah. No sense, 25 RON. Papavichu, yes, self-exiled. Okay. He has had a multi-million dollar Manhattan top-notch apartment in New York as well. Papavichu.
Oh, well, there you go.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm going to do a follow-up on that. We should do a video on that because it's an interesting story. Mm-hmm. Giuliani mentioned Romania as well. I remember it. He was on Fox, Fox and Friends, I think, and he says, just wait till you hear what they were up to in Romania.
Yeah, country I'd love to go.
Expanded on it.
Exactly, country I very much want to go to. By the way, I've never been to Romania, and Bucharest sounds an extraordinary city, beautiful city. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah, very nice, very beautiful city. Mm-hmm. From Sparky, Hunter was a dope fiend, not a was a dope fiend, not a dope friend.
Well, yeah. Well, I haven't seen these photos. Well, I've seen two of these photos. One of them, he seems to be in a bath or something like that. Anyway, he looks terrible.
Yeah, the photos are terrible.
Terrible. But I have to say, I saw him giving an interview. This is about, I think it was about a year ago that we covered it. And I have to say, when I saw him giving answers, he looked to me completely spaced out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he's not, I was going to say, he's not getting the same medicine as Joe. That's for sure. Because Joe, he made it through the debate last night. I'll give him one thing. He made it through.
Yeah, he did. He did.
He was fading out. He was fading out after, you know, I would say 45 minutes into it.
Yes.
But he made it.
He kept going. I agree. Yes.
That's two debates that he made it. I mean.
Yes. Yes.
You know, what can you say? He made gaffes, but huge gaffes, but still.
Yes.
He made it through. And I think that surprised everybody.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And we'll wrap it up. We have from Valley S, a $5 super chat. I'm missing Peter and his cute fur babies. Is he all right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He is absolutely. All right. All right. Alexander, is there anything else that you want to talk about?
I think that the momentum in this election is now, I mean, even the opinion polls, which I don't trust, are now clearly showing that the opinion poll, the momentum is now with Trump. We will see even the opinion polls admitting that the election is tightening. But I think that I think what has happened over this last week is going to be decisive. And we need to watch very carefully what's going to happen over the next week, because I predict there'll be all kinds of more revelations. We're going to have Bannon providing more information. We're going to have Senate hearings. We're going to have the social media people coming, the tech giants coming along, and they're going to be having to explain things. And we're going to have people knocking on the doors in Pennsylvania and Texas and Ohio and elsewhere, and, you know, talking about, you know, what did Biden say about fracking? Would he stop it? Yes.
What do you think the polls are going to show after the debate? And we'll wrap it up here. What do you guys in the live stream think?
I think they're going to show an even further tightening, actually. And I don't expect any of the mainstream polls, except perhaps Rasmussen, to show Trump ahead at any time, even if he wins, until he wins.
All right, then Sparky, final super chat, and we'll end it here. Consistent CPAP, CPAP use, and an EpiPen, and Joe's fine.
Well,
maybe, yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe there's more to it.
Not but, sure.
All right, everybody. Yeah, we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining us on this live stream, and thank you for all your questions and your comments and your super chats. And for everything you do to help keep this channel up and running, we appreciate it. Believe me, we had a really, really hard week from just to give a real quick FYI after the Hunter Biden thing
broke
and we were putting up videos on it and we did the live stream on it. We had our warnings as well, but we made it through.
We're still here.
And we owe that to you guys. Thank you for helping us and supporting us. But it was a very stressful week. Thanks to Big Tech. And Life of Brian says, does Big Tech media have the power to just make up election red LTD and suppress anyone protesting with the real numbers? That's the final super chat from Life of Brian. Big Tech guys, powerful.
Very Believe powerful. Me. Their power should not Believe be underestimated. Me. And if I may say this, the one great omission of the Trump years, that nothing has been done to rein it in. Nothing. Now we are starting to see the first, I think, real moves. I think they went too far. But, you know, if you really want to see something change, you need to have Donald Trump in the White House.
I was watching Sargon of Akkad, Carl Benjamin, and I think he summed it up perfectly, Alexander. He said he's getting very tired, like exhausted, like physically exhausted, he says, when he's creating videos, because he's like, every video, I feel like I'm, you know, living under the sword of Damocles.
Absolutely.
With what Big Tech can do to me. Like, yes. That was his expression. Like, you're living with, you just don't know when they're going to drop that sword down on you. And it's stressful.
No, it is stressful. I mean, you know, we don't have that all the time, but we did have it very, very bad a few days ago. Very, very bad.
All right, guys. Thank you, everybody. Alexander, thank you very much. We hope you have a good night or morning.
Indeed.
Or middle of the night, wherever you are.
And always a pleasure to speak to you know, relate to our viewers. These live things are just wonderful. And my
thank you, Spartan Warrior Queen, as well.
Yes.
And thank you, Danny, as well, for moderating. And you also have your friend right there.
Oh, indeed, Alexander. Michigan, come along. There we go. Come along. There we go. There's Michigan. He's coming along to say he's obviously feeling that he needs to be here to also say hello to our viewers.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good night.
Bye.